What's up, guys? Hey, before diving into this perspective shifting episode with James Manley, I wanted to let you know of something really special that's actually been in the works for the last month or so. We've kept this a secret for as long as possible and wanted to give y'all the heads up first. My bestie Jordan Duggar and I are starting a podcast called Rabbit Holes that's going to be premiering tomorrow, July 29th on iTunes. Jordan and I have done a few episodes together, both on Shots of the Dome and Jordan's podcast with his fiance Aaron, the Flow State of Mind podcast. If you enjoyed those episodes, you're going to love our new podcast, Rabbit Holes. As the name suggests, we're going deep down various rabbit holes that not many people talk about, such as conspiracy theories, aliens, of course, history, stories we've never shared publicly, and so much more. Jordan and I would love if you could subscribe and review our podcast on iTunes because, according to Jordan, that's how we get more people listening and boost, I'm using air quotes, our podcast up the charts. If y'all know Jordan, he's great with details like these. Plus, we just want to be able to take as many of y'all with us down these rabbit holes together. See what I did there? LOL. So keep an eye out on both of our Instagrams for a release announcement tomorrow. And without further ado, here's Shots of the Dome featuring the legendary James Manley. What's up, party people, and welcome back to Shots of the Dome. I have another very special guest, a good friend of mine. He's a former Big Ten champion for The Ohio State University. He's also a fellow online coach. He's also a corporate leader, and this is the one that I might be most impressed by, James. He's the father to two 13-year-old boys, and he and I are like roughly the same age, and I cannot imagine raising boys for the last 13 years, but I'm glad to introduce James Manley, a really good friend. What's up, James?
What's up, Sean, man? I appreciate the introduction. I always get all like kind of like shy when you do like the Big Ten champion thing because I'm so far removed from being fast anymore. I don't want anybody to pop up any questions about my speed. So I appreciate the introduction, though.
Yeah, for sure. Just kind of kick things off in this direction. Like it's even though college is now becoming, especially with COVID, like we don't know what that's going to look like going forward. But everybody kept telling me like, hey, if you're able to play a sport in college, like you'll have all kinds of doors open for you. And still, I'm sure there are people listening. You're like, hey, I'm really far removed from that. But people are like, oh my God, like Big Ten champion for like The Ohio State, like in track and field, right? So like, dude must have been really, really fast. And I'm sure you've had like advantages and doors open for you being a D1 athlete.
Yeah, man, that's exactly true. Even to this day, it still is something that comes up. It's a conversation starter, right? And I think it definitely opened up doors, especially coming from where I come from, like sports was like kind of that way out. So yeah, man, it definitely has opened up several doors in my life and has allowed me to not only understand, you know, people better, but it's allowed me to really just be a better leader, right? Sports, they correlate to a lot of different aspects of life. So yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. And these are some other things I want to get into, but I'm going to shout you out first. You mentioned, you know, sports being a nice sort of catalyst for the rest of life. And like one has to kind of be in charge of their shit. They have to have a good work ethic. They have to have discipline. They have to learn how to show up. And you and I have talked personally about, and I believe this and I say it 100%, you're an amazing role model for your kids as a Black father who's successful, who's hardworking. And there was a story that you told us that I wanted to be like, was so stoked to share on the podcast, man, about. You said the other day that one of your sons asked like, hey dad, like why do you get up early on the weekends? And you had this like mind-blowing epiphany of like, wow, they've been watching me and really haven't been saying anything, but they've been watching what I've done. And that's what I think parents don't really realize. And thankfully you're setting an amazing example for them.
Yeah, man. And that kind of gives like some backstory on that, man. It wasn't always that way. Like I had always been like really driven, but after sports, man, I kind of like took like a downfall, like, oh, okay, I need to relax type thing. And even with like my kids, like I would like sleep in on the weekend. So like they noticed that. And I had no idea that they realized like I would sleep until like not even that late, like 10, 11 o'clock. But that's late compared to what I do now, getting up on the weekends at 5:30, 6. Right. And, you know, like when he brought that question up to me, I'm like, dang, man. So this whole time, like they are literally paying attention to every aspect of my life and looking up to me as a role model. So I'm glad that I was able to make that transition from saying, OK, you know, instead of just, you know, going through the motions with life, living with purpose. And my kids see that transition. And I think that's so fulfilling because I knew I had to look myself in the mirror and say, OK, there are things that I could be doing better. You know, I'm a young father. I had my twins at age 19. And of course, I was still an adolescent at that time. So there were things that I was learning in my adulthood, still trying to raise myself along with raising twins. So of course, there's going to be opportunity for improvement. And it's so dope to see my kids now as teenagers be able to recognize that transformation and say, okay, so my dad was this kind of way, but now he's moving and he's changing his mindset and he's focused on his goals. And this is what that looks like. So it still gives them that perspective. And then it also is rewarding in the fact that, you know, they're able to recognize that.
Totally. It's funny you say waking up like, you know, 5, 6, 7 on the weekends. Dayla's been on this kick, man, of waking up at like 5, 5:15. And so it was like maybe a Friday or a Saturday. I mean, we still obviously, you know, we're working Friday, Saturday, but yeah. She got up, like went in the bathroom, heard the toothbrush come on. And I was like, there's no way, like it's fucking dark as shit. And so I like look at my phone. It was 4:15. And so I poked my head and I was like, babe, it's 4:15. She was like, just about to brush her teeth. And she was like, oh shit. She was like, oh shit, I should go back to sleep. And I'm like, yeah, it's like Saturday at 4:15. Yeah. I like want to sleep a little bit longer. You mentioned living with purpose. How did you get there? And like, obviously you and I talked a little bit about like the roadmap for where we want to go with this podcast. So it's totally fine if you want to use that as a segue, but I think that's very profound. Especially saying that you used to be, which I think like so many, I know I was that way too, like waking up around like 10, 11 noon on the weekends, because that was like normal, quote unquote. Yeah. How'd you switch that focusing on the purpose aspect?
Yeah, man. So, I guess we could go way back, but let's start like where that transition happened. So, at age 27, dude, I moved back in with my father in his basement. Because I was making poor decisions from how I managed my finances, just poor decisions on, you know, just life and kind of where I wanted to take it. I just didn't have any purpose. I was just kind of just going through the motions. And I was still, you know, able to perform at work to a certain degree, but I wasn't maximizing my potential. I have high energy and I have, I guess, a high work ethic where I can, my medium work ethic could be a normal work ethic. And I just wasn't maximizing that. And you know, I wasn't doing right with my health. You know, I was drinking, I was partying. And, when I moved back in with my parents, it was due to my insurance lapsing. So what happened is I got in a car accident because I was living paycheck to paycheck. I was just completely doing things the wrong way. I had terrible money mindsets. And, I had it to where, I wouldn't pay have my insurance come out automatically. And of course it lapsed. And, I got hit by a drunk driver. You know, thankfully I was okay, but what that did was it totaled a car that I had just bought, maybe a year before and I didn't have any insurance. So I was out of a car. So I needed to figure out, okay, how do I A, pay off this car, B, get another car, and then C, still afford to live and take care of my kids. And the best resort at the time was moving in with my parents. And I can remember being in that basement and, just being down on myself about, you know, where I just had my kids. At that time, I'm 27, you know, the job that I was working, I was fully capable of being able to manage my finances. I was just doing dumb shit just because of what I was raised, how I was raised. And, you know, unfortunately, I didn't have parents that had that background financially to say, hey, when you're making money, you need to invest in this part of it, save this part of it. And then this is how you budget for things that you want to do. I didn't have that. So when I had a little bit of money, man, I was just making it rain in clubs and just doing shit to just try to impress people at the end of the day. And it got me exactly where I didn't want to be. And that was a point at which I realized, I'm like looking at myself, I'm like, okay, like, where do I want to go? And I got into bodybuilding. That was my catalyst into just really helping myself, you know, get back in tune with the athletic abilities that I knew I had, right? Getting in the gym consistently, eating healthy. And that all started transitioning into me focusing on other aspects of my life. So that was like the high level view. We can rewind and go back to some of my childhood and kind of get to a place where you can see how I led up to that point at 27, like, because it's all based off of, you know, how I was raised. So
yeah, for sure. And kudos to you, James. This is something that we talk about with all of our clients in DLD Nation, how a fitness journey sometimes dovetails, well, it always, when doing it right, dovetails really nicely into a personal development journey. And like, once we figure out that we can really take care of ourselves, take care of our bodies, and then see a transformation and see progress. We have so many clients, they like poke their head up and they're like, what else can I change? Like, I'm not really digging the job. Like, could I change this too? Or like, oh man, I can save more money. Like, could I adjust this? And so it's really cool that you were exampled that. And like you said, I have to imagine that some of your ability to switch that perspective and not, you know, because like, dude, how many other people would get hit by a drunk driver, have to move back in with their parents and then just say, fuck it. You know,
yeah,
and
yeah.
Like, I'm just in the basement, like I'll try my best, you know, taking care of the kids. And so via conversations with you that you and I have had, I know that you grew up And you kind of alluded to it, like you didn't have a sick jump shot, but you were pretty fast. And so that got you out of the hood, but you also were able to go to a school from like a very urban, and I'm using air quotes, to like a more white school. And so I wanted to get into like what that transition looked like for you, and then how that helped you as you aged and as you got older, deal with problems.
Yeah, for sure, man. So I'll kind of go back to just kind of like my upbringing. So my parents both divorced when I was like age 5. Where I live with my dad, and my parents built a house together. So we were like kind of like middle class. But then when they divorced, right, then you go to having two incomes to going to having one income. And my parents divorced. I lived with my dad for a few years, who still owned the home that I lived in and had my, you know, went to elementary school. And then my mother got custody of me right when I got into like middle school, or a little bit before that, where I moved into what they would refer to as like Section 8 housing. Not all of the homes were, like, I don't think our home was Section 8, but the community had that as an option. So with that being said, you know, there's a lot of poverty in that area. And it was a complete shift for me, right? Because, you know, going from my parents being together, and I don't really remember that too much, more so than being in the house, right? Like, we're living with my father. But from going to living in a house where, you know, it's, you know, what you grew up in and all you know, to then moving into an apartment where, even in that apartment, I was living in my room, because I had two sisters. My room was the room that was in the basement. And it wasn't a finished basement. So it was a basement that wasn't in the best shape. But at the end of the day, it was a room, right? And I had a bed in it. So I could be thankful for that. But when I moved to that neighborhood, man, it was like a very challenging just time for me, because I had to uproot, build new friends in an area where there's more violence. You know, there's a ton of things that go on that a lot of people probably don't even realize happen in neighborhoods. And you know, that for me, was a challenging time, where I was just trying to understand how I fit in. And, I can remember there being a ton of crime, murders, you name it. I used to do things, and I was talking to our buddy Jordan, on his podcast, to make money out there, I used to freak Black and Milds. Black and Milds are basically cigars that a lot of you see in the inner city. A lot of people smoke.
I was going to say, too, if you haven't smoked a Black and Mild, you can go grab one at like 7-Eleven, and you will think you would look the coolest you've ever looked.
Yeah. So I used to freak Black and Milds for like the older. The guys, they would shoot craps like right outside the corner store, and like they just didn't want to freak Black and Mild. So I used to get like $1 for freaking one. I'm like, of course. And I used to go to the corner store and then buy whatever I wanted from the corner store. But it's just that type of environment, man, that I was in. I guess one of the most scariest moments that I can think of going back to, where I didn't even really understand it at the time, was when I was playing a game called Curveball. I think I mentioned this story to you, maybe not.
I heard some of it on when Jordan, shout out to Jordan Duggar, on his podcast, Flow State of Mind, he like posted some of it, and I saw it, and then I messaged you about it, because I was just like, yo, I need to hear the rest of the story.
Yeah, man. So I was playing Curveball. Basically, Curveball is like, it's a game that you play when you don't have a basketball court in your neighborhood, and you're like, okay, what are we going to do with the basketball? And basically what we did was there's two curbs. It was like almost an alleyway that you have to drive through before you segue off into another area of the apartment complex that I lived in. And it had a curve on each side. And we used to shoot the ball and try to hit the curve. If you hit the curve, then you got X amount of points or whatever. Well, we were playing this game, and it got really, like, really fucking heated, because, you know, shit talking, you know how it goes when you're kids. Like, and I remember this kid that had just moved to our neighborhood from New York. He would pop fly all the time about being from New York. You know how that goes.
What's up, son?
100%. What's up, son? That, like, literally. Yep. Those are exactly the same exact words you use. Well, anyways, got in a heated argument, and this kid pulls a gun out on my friend Dante. And it was like a silver 22. I can remember it so vividly, because it was the first time I'd ever seen a gun. Not only the first time I've seen a gun, but it being pulled out and pointed to someone's head at like the age 11. That's my first experience with a gun. So
yeah, when you're basically just playing like with friends, like with anybody else in America, for the most part, they're like, I've played in cul-de-sacs before, and then someone pulls out a burner, you're like, wait a minute, what?
Yeah, for sure, man. And I can just remember being kind of like froze, like, oh shit, like, is he about to shoot my friend? And thank God he didn't end up doing it, and they kind of just exchange of words. But at the end of the day, the fact that it happened, like, I didn't even tell my mom. My mom heard Jordan's podcast, and then she was like, how come you never told me? I'm like, Mom, you didn't want to know that at that age. Right. You would have been freaking out. So, like, just growing up in a very challenging time, man, I had seen so much, you know, between even, like, you know, murders, right, dead bodies. Like, those are things that I experienced growing up. So seeing, you know, not only my mom kind of like work her way up into the suburbs and be able to get us into better schooling, that was a huge motivating factor to say, hey, if you put your mind to anything, you can do it. Because I'll tell you right now, if she didn't move our family, me and my sister, from, you know, the neighborhood was called Woodcrest. They had gang signs and everything, you name it. If she didn't move us from Woodcrest to Gahanna, I would have went to a school where the crime rate was so high, they didn't play football games on Friday nights like the rest of the nation, right? Their football games were played on Saturday mornings because of the crime rate. So when you think about that, you know, even for myself, I'm like, man, my life could have went a completely different direction, you know, had we not made it out of, you know, the situation that we were in. And I was super thankful for that. And it was a huge culture shock for me coming into Gahanna, just because I got, like, just being fully transparent, I had never seen, we didn't have at my middle school, we never had any, we had probably 5% white population and the rest of it was African-American. And it was a complete opposite when I moved to Gahanna. So it was like, I remember my friends giving me shit like, oh, like you gonna start talking to white girls, blah, 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 this and that. And I'm like, nah, not at all. And like, I get there and I immediately fall in love. Like,
yeah, you might have another choice too. It's
So like it was a huge culture shock there, even like seeing some of the opportunity, right? You always talk about not really knowing what's out there until things become aware for you. And, you know, surrounding yourself in environments where, you know, there's families whose homes are as big as my apartment complex. And I'm like, what the heck? Like, this even exists? So it was a bit challenging, but I was able to really adjust and really able to find my way through, you know, moving to the suburbs just from being in sports. Going back to what I said earlier, like, sports taught me how to relate to people, right? Because I went from playing sports in the inner city to playing sports in, you know, the suburbs where that was our common ground, and it allowed me to be able to relate. So,
yeah, Jordan's talked about that too, how he played football growing up in high school and it was all white boys. And they said that they would like band together because they'd have to play the like all black high schools. And then when Jordan went to college, started playing in college, he was playing with the black guys and then saw how they were getting treated at parties and whatnot. And he was like, wait a minute, like, this is different than how I grew up. And thankfully he took that in as a white person. It was like, I'm going to adjust how I do things and adjust my perspective. You know, you mentioned obviously your mom working really hard to create a better life for you and the family. Was that similar to kind of like your boys seeing you wake up early and hustle and that whole thing? Like, did you see your mom like, all right, we're trying to get in a better neighborhood, like, life's improving? Did you say then like, okay, what's my thing? Like, could I use sports to, you know, like jumpstart further or sort of propel yourself further? Did that ever dawn on you? Or were you just like, I'm just into sports, and then all of a sudden you woke up and you're like, wow, I'm really fast.
So it's crazy you say that, like, because as a kid, you don't realize that that's what's really happening. You're kind of just like living your kid life. And it wasn't until I became an adult that it really started to dawn on me as I was like raising my own kids. It's like, yeah, you like as a parent, you want your kids to experience, have a better experience than you did, right? So seeing my mom do that, and, you know, when I became a parent myself, it's like, okay, like, either I can go down the rabbit hole, not rabbit hole, but I can go down the statistic of being a African-American father that doesn't take care of their kids, like you see, unfortunately, right. Or I could be the example that is the complete opposite and take care of my kids and put them in a scenario that's better than mine and own up, right? Because having twins, I'll tell you right now, like the first time that I was made aware of it, I was like, no, you're joking. I'd always told myself in this weird, like, kind of, I don't know why way, but I was like, I could have one kid and be okay. And then of course, what do I have? I have twins. So kind of freaking out, but not really. But, I definitely, I've always had the mentality that, I kind of had something to prove, right? I knew this, the odds were against me, having twins at age 19, you know, being a single father, like the statistics just say that, you know, African-American fathers are not present in lives and you see it all the time. And my father was, and I could not be the example of that when that's not how I was raised. My father was there for me. throughout my life. And I know I needed to make sure that I owned up to that. And I would definitely say seeing how my mother kind of worked her way up definitely kind of like paved the way for me to say, hey, you know, I need to continue this journey, right? Because as you can see in most of America, right, African Americans are kind of like 10 steps behind, you know, the majority, right, when it comes to opportunity and what's presented. So I've always felt like I had to, you know, prove myself and make sure that I showed up. Now, did I always do that? No, because obviously I had to move back in with my parents. But that goes with life lessons and how you continue to move past and better yourself.
Well, it's all how we look at it too. Like my best friend, who we were each other's best man in each other's wedding. And before he decided to get married, he was in his late 20s, right around your age, 27, 28. And he wasn't in a car accident, thankfully, but he was just like, and living in Los Angeles, he was like, I could live at home and save some money and then, you know, eventually marry my girlfriend and put a down payment down on like a condo or something. And he did it as a strategic move, which like, LOL, you know, white privilege, like he's able to do that. And his parents were able to help him out, et cetera. But it's funny how we look at it, right? Like 20, 30 years ago, if someone was like, oh, I'm living at home, be like, oh, haha, like you right. suck. Versus now it's like, oh, I'm living at home. Like, that's smart. Like, you're really yeah. saving money or like get back to feed that way. But you're so right, James, like the juxtaposition that you were talking about and, you know, being aware of other people's perspective. Like there's a great quote that I love that's like, and I'm paraphrasing, our perspective is only as far as we can see. And mm-hmm. so I'm a big fan of like collecting perspectives, quote unquote, to understand how other people live. Cause like when you and I were talking, when you were here in Austin, I grew up in a very affluent neighborhood in Los Angeles, but because it was so affluent, 90% of the community sent their kids to private high school to the tune of like $40,000 a year back in the like late 90s, early 2000s. And wow. my parents, like, I learned as I got older that like my parents made enough money for us to live in this nice neighborhood. And that was my parents like giving me a leg up. Like I wouldn't have to worry about a lot of the bullshit that a lot of people in Los Angeles would have to deal with. However, we didn't have the money to go to private school. It was actually when I was 8, my parents sat me down and I was going to private school and they were like, so it costs this for you to like go to school or it could be free. And apparently at 8 years old, I was like, oh, I get it. That's less money. Like for sure, I'll go to public school. And so my point being that only 10% of the community sent their kids to public school. And so they had to bust in the other 90%. So we had an all black cheerleading squad. Like our basketball team always made like state finals, football team was okay. We had, you know, drive by. I was there freshman, sophomore year and we had to drive by my 8th grade year. And so when my parents were taking me home from middle school, like I saw the tape and all that stuff and they're like, yeah, there's a shooting, da, da, da. But it was normal. Cause it was like, oh, we're at an LAUSD school. Like this happens just because we live in a nice community. Doesn't mean this isn't going to happen, but we would have guys on like the basketball team and they'd, you know, maybe practice and then go to one of the white guys' houses in the neighborhood, hang out, play video games, do homework, whatever. And then the parents would like give them a $50 bill and just be like, hey, like, buy yourself something nice or like go get something to eat tonight. Yeah. You know, like, are you kidding me? And then meanwhile, the white teammates like, well, let me drive you home. And so now they're going into like Inglewood, which is surprisingly now being gentrified or other, you know, Crenshaw areas of Los Angeles that aren't the greatest.
Right.
One, the teammate would be like, you don't need to do that. And they'd be like, oh, no, I'll drive you. But they would eventually be like, hey, just drop me off here. Cause the white person would be like, I don't know. And they're like, yeah, you probably should stop and like pull over and let me out. And I just find that so crazy, but it gives a really nice perspective. Like have at a young age, a really great perspective of like both sides. And you got to see like, okay, what do I want to take? Because, you know, like my community, I grew up in a lot of kids they don't have to worry about money. And so it's very challenging for them to be motivated to actually go out and get it. Whereas like you get to see kind of both sides and sort of like pick and choose what you want to live going forward, if that makes sense.
No, yeah, it does 100%, man. And one thing that I will always say that's what has always driven me was being driven from the pain of like, I don't want to ever be in that situation again. I mean, I was in scenarios where, you know, our gas, you know, got cut off because we couldn't afford the bill and my mom's heating the house with the stove. So like, and we're washing our bodies in the sink with boiled water. Like that experience is what let me know like, hey, I never like there's this quote and I may mess it up, but it's change doesn't happen till the pain of change becomes greater the pain of changing becomes greater than the pain of remaining the same. And that's literally like how I think about my life is like, you know, I had those experiences as kids, and I'm like, no, I'm not doing. I mean, like, to the point, I don't know if you've ever seen a water bug. Water bugs are about 2 inches in size, right? And I would have those in my room because I was in the basement. Like, those are memories that drove me to say, I'll never have this as being my reality ever again. And I always go back to some of that, even with my kids, because I still want my kids to know, like, hey, it could be a lot worse. Because, you know, I'm getting a request. I got a request at 1 o'clock in the morning last night from my son for a stylus pin for his iPhone 11. Like, dude, A, why are you up at 1 o'clock in the morning? And B, why do you want the stylus pin for your phone? So, like I want my kids to have that perspective of, like, hey, you still got to go out and get it, right? There's no knight in, you know, shining armor that's going to save you, right? There's nobody, like your success is your responsibility. And I want my kids to still be able to have that, because that's what drove me as a kid to realize that, hey, I don't want to go back to that, because I experienced it. I know what it's about. And I want to do everything that I can in my might to be able to change that. And that's what allowed me to start realizing that, you know, I have to continue to level up in sports. Sports was my way out. It was my way to get a scholarship to Ohio State, right? That was, and I knew that if I did not do that, then there was going to be an opportunity for me to maybe go back. So, like, that was always in my foresight. Every race, you know, I had that in my head. Like, hey, like, this is my way out of the scenario that I was in. And yeah, man. So I definitely think that having a perspective of growing up in the inner city, and then seeing that transitioning to the suburbs, gave me that perspective. Like, man, there's opportunity out here. We just have to go and get it. You know, it's not going to come to us. Like, it's ours to grab. And, you know, my job was to not leave anything on the table. And that's just kind of how I continue to approach things.
Yeah, 100%. It is so wild, James, the differences, because, like, I had the same mentality of, like, I had to get swimming to college, and that would sort of set my life on in a really positive direction. And it's funny because yours was like, I need to get the fuck out of here and I'm never going back. And mine was white parents, basically, you know, my mom's half Korean, but saying, like, hey, if you make it to college as an athlete, there will be so many doors that will open for you. And, like, yeah, you know, the world will be your oyster. So it's very interesting, like, the different approaches. I did want to ask real quick, have you seen Entourage? You ever watched that show back in the day?
No, I never watched Entourage.
You kind of know what it's about.
Yeah, I know about it. Yeah,
so there's one of the main characters, Ari, who's, like, the most famous, the agent. He kind of came from nothing and made some of himself, and then he has kids. And he was like, yeah, the goal is to, like, give them a good life, but not have them doing cocaine on Sunset, like Sunset Boulevard.
So
that's the challenge of any parent when they are successful and then they have kids, and they have to, like, instill that drive and that work ethic. So, you know, you were able to take yourself from, you know, sort of like where you didn't want to be into college through athletics. And then you have that period where you're after college, things get kind of challenging, and then you find fitness through bodybuilding, taking care of yourself. How does that eventually evolve to where you are now as an online coach?
Yeah, man. So this is so crazy. So when I graduated from college, I knew that I knew I wasn't always going to be working for someone, right? I knew that there was more for me than to just be working for someone all the time. I just never knew exactly what it was going to be. And I knew that each role that I had in leadership, so I've worked for a couple of different corporations, right? I worked for Target Corp as a leader. I've worked for Victoria's Secret International, Bath and Body Works International as a leader. And even now, I still work for a pharmaceutical tech startup called Cover My Meds, who's owned by McKesson. And I have a leadership role with them. And so I've always had these leadership roles, and I knew that in each role I was taking away something that would help me eventually run my own business. And I never knew what the business was, and I never had any insight to it. But I knew when I was at Target, I was like, okay, like, what's going to help me down the road when it comes to understanding how to run my own business? Cause I did not go to school for business. I went to school for criminal justice, criminology, just coming from the background of, like, seeing how police, you know, interaction was in the inner city. Like, I wanted to be a positive light towards that. So I got a degree in criminology to study crime, but didn't end up going that route because I didn't see any opportunity for upward mobility, just because everything is very tenure based. So as I began to take on these different roles, I knew that I was grasping something. Well, when bodybuilding hit, I never went pro. I missed my pro card, but, like, one spot in men's physique. But what happened was I began to have
to do for people listening, like, to go pro. James is acting like, oh, like, I missed it. Like, it's very challenging to do. So, like, you crushed it.
Yeah, so I did pretty well at the national level. But what happened in that transition, as I began to focus on my health and whatnot, I started to get a bunch of requests on like how I transform my body, because after college, I thought I deserved a break, and I took a break, and that break ended up being a lot of years, and I lost like all muscle mass. I was like 140 pounds, like soaking wet, like very skinny.
Stop working out.
Yeah, I stopped working out. I was like I had a gym membership just to like kind of go maybe every once in a while. But yeah, I completely like thought I needed a break, and that break turned out to be forever. And I lost like all muscle mass. So when I picked up bodybuilding as kind of like that outlet to get myself back into shape and feeling good, like I stopped drinking for like 2 years where I didn't drink any alcohol just because I was like in a very dark place when I had to move back in with my parents. But by understanding how my body responded to nutrition, and then also understanding like how to effectively work out, like I had a ton of coaches. I had three different coaches that I worked with in that time frame to kind of help me get my body back to where I wanted to be. As I was making this transformation for myself, people started reaching out to me. I'm like, man, I don't know. Here's my coach. Like, you're not going to get the answers you're looking for from me. And that's when the idea came into my head of like, dude, why don't you, you know, start coaching people to transform their lives? And that's when I got a personal training certification and really started to jump into, you know, nutrition, understanding workout programming and whatnot. And I started my business in 2017, and I just got an LLC. I didn't know what to do. So I like went to like, I was on Google, like trying to figure out what do you need to get a business started? And then like LLC popped up. So I'm like, yeah.
How to be an entrepreneur.
So that was the first step. And I figured out this, figured out how to get my LLC. And from there, then it was like, oh shit, like I don't even know how to run a business. Like, so I did some more Googling, and there's a local community college here who offers, they call it a small business development center. And they offer just like education around how you run a business, right? And the different resources that are out there for you that are funded by the state and whatnot. And I took full advantage of that. And it only got me so far because it's so, you know, I guess generic. It's not really streamlined in the, you know, health fitness, right? It doesn't like get you that kind of bucket. So I kind of had my LLC and just didn't know what I was going to do with it. I wrote a couple meal plans via Word and Excel documents for my workouts. So I started there, maybe had like a couple clients and just did it as like a hobby. And as I began to really take on that coach aspect, because the thing is I've always been a leader, whether that's captain on sports teams, whether that's within these corporations that I work with. So I knew how to lead people and coach people through, you know, how to better themselves once I got the knowledge on how to do it. And it's the same applying those same leadership principles to them, where I was in a dark place with the company that I was at the time. I don't even care. L Brands. So I was in a dark, with L Brands where, you know, I started to see things from an upper management, you know, level that I didn't agree with for me as far as my values. We had values, but people were there to appease. And it was more so like, you do what everybody else is doing. If you have your own way of doing things or you have your own opinion, then you're looked at as like not fitting in. And that's just not me. And I think, you know, going through those challenges with having to move back in with my parents and whatnot, and then starting to overcome that gave me the confidence to actually step away from that job. It was a 6-figure job where I stepped away and I was like, you know what? I'm done. Like I can't sit here and, you know, not be allowed to be myself. Because who I am is me at the core, and that's what's allowed me to get where I am today. And I can remember sitting in the office and putting in like my 2 weeks. I'm like, hey, you know what? I'm just going to bet on myself. I'm leaving, and I didn't have any backup plan but my LLC business that I Googled. Like that was it. And in that moment, this is like December of 2018, where I had only made like $500 with my personal training business at this point, and I didn't have like any true plan, but once again, like I had already been at my lowest and I kind of already got myself back up. So I had confidence in myself. You know, they always say like those trials and tribulations you go through, they're learnings, right? And they help you build confidence. That's why I always tell people, man, like, hey, when things aren't going right, like embrace that and pay attention and understand what it is you're actually going through. Because once you get through that and you're able to continue to push through and get over that hump, your level of confidence is going to increase And the next time you have that scenario, you're going to know what to do. Perfect example is COVID, right? Like COVID hit. And, you know, if you're a business owner, like you're like, oh crap, like what am I going to do? And we like those that are really able to push through are like, hey, we're going to figure this out because I've been here before, right? I've been in a place where we have to try to figure out what to do next. And once you get through that, it just adds a layer of confidence to you where it's like you start to become like unstoppable. And like, of course, we can be stopped, you know, but at the end of the day, like as long as we don't die, you just keep going, right? So,
yeah. No, I agree 100%, James. I like how you said that because it's really just shifting that perspective. Like, I know you and I were trading a ton of texts, like you, me, Carter, Trent, about mm-hmm. when COVID happened. Like, what are we all doing to kind of get around it? And it is interesting. It is like a superpower. And you know, I want to like point out a couple things that you talked about, James, with those who are listening right now. But a big one is developing that skill of like trying to, instead of, you know, because we all get negative news, we all get bad news, quote unquote, time, but it's important to try to look at like, okay, how can I get around this? Or like, how can this problem be solved? And going into like the solution mode, because then like, you know, and I'm even going to agree with you that like we're unstoppable. I'm going to disagree with you where you were like, well, you can be stopped. I think it's just in those moments, if you have that perspective of like, okay, I'm looking for the solution. I've gotten over hurdles in the past. So mm-hmm. that happens, something negative happens. And then it's like, okay, how can I get around this? And you're right that you draw on other instances. Like recently I had something like not so great happen, and immediately like in my mind I was like, all right, go back, Sean, like what were some tough things you've gotten through? And it was just like having that confidence of like, okay, this is mm-hmm. just another challenge, like I can get through mm-hmm. that. There was something else I wrote some notes next to me because I wanted to point out, oh yeah, before I get into the notes, because I don't know if you realize some of this shit, man, like I'm gonna up here in a sec, but hopefully those listening have picked up like all of the instances that James has been talking about where he hit a roadblock or was stopped and then moved around it. And like the foresight you had and the wherewithal to like, let me go on Google. Like, I'm not the first person to do this. Like, let me see mm-hmm. if there's other answers. Looking for community college, like education, like even if it's not like specific for online coaching, it's like, how can I learn how to, you know, pay taxes and like structure a business so it has a strong foundation. And so those listening, you know, paying attention, like James is a perfect example of bettering himself every single time that he set a challenge. And to you, my friend, you mentioned being a leader, and like, hopefully I think you realize this, but I was just making notes, like you're a positive light in your neighborhood, like trying to help people out. And then you're a positive light in college, even through your major, where you were trying, you know, going through criminal justice, trying to be a light for your community and other people. Mm-hmm. Then also being a light with being a coach. Like that's, you know, what we do at the end of the day is help people be happier, healthier humans. And then being that for your kids, like being a source of inspiration. So have you realized that this is like this common thread through your life?
I've never thought about it that way. So I've always known that I've had a passion to help people, but I've never looked at how that's shown up in my life, especially earlier on. It's more so like as I become in my adult years. So you bringing that to my attention, I'm like, oh shit, like he's fucking right. Like, like I have, like this has always been something that has been a part of me just as a person, man. And anybody that I've come across, you know, I've always tried to add value, even to you, right? I've known Sean now for, you know, what, since February. So I met Sean right before COVID. So like, sure. You know, and even in that, man, I'm always thinking like, man, how can I be a positive light on Sean? Or like same thing with Jordan, you know, Carter, like I always want to be a positive light on our friend group. And that goes for anybody, right? My clients. I just had a client, you know, mention to me that he's going through a breakup. Just, you know, he just joined and he's like, man, he's like, I'm in a tough time right now, man. And I'm like, immediately he texted. I got this. So I use an app, but I got a text at like 4 o'clock in the morning about this. And I'm like, dang, man. So I, you know, I immediately hop on, you know, voice memo. I'm like, yo, if you need my time, like, you know, we can definitely hop on a call. If you need someone to just listen, like I'm here for you, because I don't like to see people hurt. And I want to make sure that I can do my best to help. And I think that comes from probably, you know, just kind of my background and just like, you know, being in those times where it's like, man, what the hell is going on right now? You know, with like growing up and just feeling that struggle, man, I just never want anyone to feel that same pain. So I appreciate you kind of highlighting that. I never thought about it like that.
Yeah, for sure. It's the first actual shot to the dome that we've had in Shots to the Dome. No, for real, it's something that I do in my own life. And I think for those listening, it's something that you can do in your own lives. Is there is a, in my experience, in my opinion, like a thread that sort of goes back from when we were a kid to, you know, adolescent to all of a sudden being an adult. And if we can recognize what that thread is and then really double down on it, that's where I think we all, you know, kind of live our purpose and like live our passion. And that's where we're able to be the best version of ourselves while also impacting others to be the best version of themselves. Like, I've done this in my life, James. Like, I've always been like a helper. Like, when we were playing basketball on the blacktop, I was the guy that had the first aid kit. And so I would take the antiseptic out and do it and then bandage them up. I'd be like, yo, you're good. Like, let's keep playing.
And then if you're Carter Good and you're on a boat and somehow you cut your foot, like, here's Sean to catch you and save you.
Oh man. He gave me like four of these, like, right after. Obviously, like, we're enjoying ourselves on the boat, and it was Carter here, me, and then Chad. And there was like the, you know, engine well where they have the motor. And so Carter just like moved his foot and he slipped and the foot like went into the thing, and that's where he cut himself. But he just turned like this. And like, I don't know if he's told you, he's had some like shoulder issues, and we're on a pontoon boat. And so it's literally like the three of us, but right to the side is the seats. And so he started going down and he just like landed perfectly where I was like this, and his arms like hit. And so of course, after the fact, we were like, well, he could have ended up like Vlad at the bachelor party. Like,
very true.
Worst case, but I was like, you could have also fucked up your shoulder. But I was so shocked, James, and that's why I did that story, because like old Sean, you know, from before I like got into, you know, swimming, Sean would have just been able to sort of like gently guide Carter down like into the sea. But Sean now, the lifter Sean, I just like grabbed him and I was like, oh fuck, like he stopped. And I was like, we're good. And I like stood up, like, we're good. And then turned and he's like, bro, and then
dapped you up. Yeah.
Yeah, so functional fitness people. But yeah, having the that thread of helping people. I also love our group, man. Like James was saying, we've only known each other since like February, but really connected. You and I are in a really fun text group with Carter and Trent. We're always hyping each other up, like hustling, you know, working for something that's bigger than ourselves, which I think is beautiful.
Yeah, for sure, man. And I think that's another thing too, just for your listeners, right? When you think about going, you know, starting a new journey, right? Whether that's fitness, whether that's entrepreneurship, whether that's, hey, you're starting your first leadership role, like surrounding yourself around individuals that are in that, you know, same, you know, ecosystem, right? And really just bettering themselves overall, like, is going to be key, right? So you think about joining a fitness journey and you're like the only one in your friend group, like I was for myself, like who like completely cut out alcohol, but then you have your friends saying, hey, let's drink, right? Like, you want to make sure that you have those influences on your life that's going to reinforce where you're trying to go, right? So when you think about our friend group, man, that's one thing that I love about, you know, the connections that you and I have been able to make and the connections that I've been able to make just in general. One thing that I've always noticed is when I'm surrounding myself in those right ecosystems, that's when I'm thriving at my best, right? And I really protect that, man. And I can sometimes be almost hesitant to make that connection depending on how we meet, but I'm always trying to protect my energy when it comes to that. And for the listeners, man, you have to do that if you're pursuing a fitness journey, if you're trying to pursue a career as an entrepreneur, whatever it is, you have to surround yourself with those individuals, because if you don't, you know, people will talk you out of it and not even realize it, right? It's just them being themselves and not having that same drive, passion as you, and be inviting you to do things that are going to take you off track. So you really have to protect your energy. And that's one thing that I can say we all do as a friend group, is just really protect our friend group and the energy that we have within it, to make sure that that we're going to, you know, welcome people that are going to continue to push us and point us in the right direction and learn from each other, right? And not take it personal. Like, you know, even if there's some things that I'm not doing right, I expect Sean to be like, yo, James, you could be doing this better, and vice versa, right? And then not take it personal at all. And I think even in Austin, we had some of those moments where we were giving each other feedback on like what we could be doing better to continue to grow. And that's what true friendships are really about, is not being able to, you know, not taking things personal, which I learned from a really great book. If you haven't read The Four Agreements, I highly suggest that for the listeners, because that book transformed my life and my mentality around just, you know, how I perceive things that go on in my world. So
yeah, for sure. Well, you hit on two big things. One, Four Agreements is Dayla's favorite book. She's read it a ton. And so her tattoos are even inspired by Four Agreements. And then probably the listeners, Shasta Dome, people who follow me, are tired of me talking about how we are the average of the five people we spend the most time with. And so please, people, know I did not pay James to go on that topic talking about what works for him. But you're totally right, man. Like, my best friend who lived at home for a little bit, he's the perfect example of that. Like, he doesn't do online coaching. He's not in the fitness space at all. But as we've evolved and grown, he's been like our biggest cheerleader. He's always there for us if I like text him to vent, vice versa. Same thing with you, me, Trent, Carter. Like, I know when COVID hit, we had some people who had to quit. You had some people who had to quit, like, for mm-hmm. obvious reasons, like waiters, waitresses, bartenders, like, they, you know, everything was closed. And you and I were trading texts of like, hey, you know, even just hyping each other up, like, hey, stay in it. Like, people are yeah. still signing up. It's not the end of the world. And yeah. Sharing tips, like, even before we hopped on, you and I were sharing strategy. Like, James came out and was like, oh man, I got some new. And yeah. so, yeah, I appreciate that we can all do this. What's funny is, those listening, this is the second time we've tried this. The first time, the connection. Oh, yeah. And we just ended up like bullshitting a little bit, trying to figure this out. I wanted to let you know, and I forgot to show you when you were here. I took a screenshot of how you froze.
Oh, man. Your picture. That's so funny. Yeah, man. But just going back even to like sharing strategies. And one thing too, I think that a lot of people think is like whenever you're pursuing like, a big change or whatever, that it's going to be comfortable and that it's going to be like this good feeling. But no, not at all. I can remember how I really took my business to the next level was investing in business coaching. Right. So I got with a couple of different trainers. Our good friend Eddie, he was my first mastermind that I joined, where I'm like, oh, this is how you scale a business. This is how it can correlate to fitness. Right. Because I remember I started off with the small business college, like they give me the generic version, but then it's like I got more specific once I was able to, you know, get some capital to invest in a mastermind, where I invested in my first mastermind. I remember it was still like, it wasn't, at the time, it wasn't uncomfortable. It was enough to be like, okay, like this better work. And I invested the money into the program, and then I ended up 5x-ing the money that I invested in the first 3 months. I'm like, oh shit. So like, then I got into, you know, the online space from in person, and that's when I had to invest into another coach that specialized in online coaching. His name's Vince Del Monte, really good dude. He's an OG in the online game. But I remember when I got his invoice for coaching, and the crazy thing is like I had every opportunity to be like, no, I didn't have the money. To be honest, it was $22,000. I didn't have $22,000. At the time, but I had $22,000 because I took that leap of faith. And, you know, I was able to invest in my mindset and how I viewed things and the opportunities I was able to take care of. And also putting myself in those environments and sitting in those rooms at the mastermind events, like really just like took me to the next level. And had I gone back, like, and, you know, let the fact that I didn't have a fluid $22,000 sitting in my bank account, you know, and been like, well, I just don't have the money, or, you know, I just can't afford it right now. If I would have let those like limiting beliefs like show up and stick, then I could have missed out on, you know, a lot of opportunity to change people's perspectives and reach more people when it comes to living a healthier life, man. So, you know, those that get uncomfortable when you're like, oh, I got to invest in my health, like investing in yourself is the best thing that you can ever do, because once you do it, then you have skin in the game, meaning that you're going to be more invested in executing, right? A lot of people always try to think that like it's the free solution that's going to save them. But no, the free solutions don't work because you don't have anything to lose if it doesn't, right? So like when you put yourself out there and you invest in, you have some, you know, type of skin in the game, it's going to cause you to show up for yourself that much better, right? Like the only reason why I probably show up for myself, if I'm being honest, is because A, I want to have a better life for my kids. But then B, I also don't want to waste $22,000. So like, yeah. I'm making sure that I show up for myself every day. And that's why my kids see the change of me getting up at 5:30, 6 o'clock on the weekends versus sleeping until 10, 11 o'clock. Because I could do that, but that's just not where I am right now in my life. And I don't see myself really ever being there. I love getting up early because it's therapeutic for me to be able to relax and like meditate. Like those are part of my daily habits that I do. I just hit a streak like 59 days straight meditating, and like it was like a big deal for me, because I remember when I first started meditation, when I quit my job at L Brands, because I was like, okay, I'm about to go into some really uncomfortable times. Like, how am I going to be proactive about the anxiety that may show up? And meditation was something that I heard on a podcast. And that's how I got involved with it. And I hit a 59 day streak. And that was big, but I kind of broke it like this past Saturday, but it's all good. I still hit the streak. That was my highest one. So.
Yeah. I love that you bring up meditation as well. This is something that I'm very passionate about. Listeners know. And so again, I did not pay James to bring this up. I also appreciate you saying how when you first started, you know, you're new to it, and then we get better as we meditate. And mm-hmm. it's funny you brought it up, because I wanted to bring, are you familiar with transcendental meditation? Have you heard of that?
I haven't.
So it's a type of meditation. I actually heard it from Tim Ferriss. It's also called TM, but you get like a personal mantra and they do like 20 or 30 minutes twice a day, but it's, I think, $30,000
to
get your personal mantra and all that stuff. And when Tim has talked about it on his podcast, he's like, well, yeah, if you weren't paying any money, you probably wouldn't show up. But if you paid 30 grand, you're like, I should probably show up.
Yeah, 100%. You show up way different when you invest than if you don't invest. Man, and it's all like, and the thing is too, is like when you're, and it's not to say just go invest in bullshit, do your research, right? And say, okay, I'm ready to level up. Like, I'm ready to take my overall quality of life to the next level, you know, even if that's starting with fitness, and invest in something that you believe in. And when you make that investment, man, you're going to show up, you know, and it may make you somewhat uncomfortable, but stick with it because it's going to change your life. Right. And that's one thing that I coach my clients through is, you know, even I had a guy who he invested in my coaching program, and in the first month he lost his job. And then he's like, oh man, he's like, I lost my job. Like, I can't, like, I'm like, hey, I was like, you don't know what the future has for you. I was like, right now you're just going to make up stories about what could happen. Right. And yeah, and who's to say like that you like won't find the job of your life like from this opportunity? Maybe this is a sign that it's not a good fit. This dude stuck with the program. I coached him through it. We hopped on calls. I supported him through the challenging times. Last week of working with me, he lands his dream job as a rocket scientist out in Seattle. And I'm like, dude, I'm hot. And like, just imagine how that changed his level of confidence and belief in what he's able to accomplish. Like, because he challenged himself and because he pushed through that challenging time. Like, there's probably nothing you can tell this guy. He's a rocket scientist now.
So, I love that payoff too, because it was like, oh, good dream job. Like, oh, okay, when you were like rocket scientist, like, holy shit, that is a dream job.
Yeah. So, man, it's just, you know, really just digging deep into the mindset piece, man. And I, as a kid growing up in the inner city, if I told the kids at the time that I was there, like, man, I'm gonna grow up and I'm gonna meditate, I'd probably be laughed at. I would have been clowned. They talked clowned for days, like. And it's because this is how it is in the inner city, unfortunately. It's like, man, you got to have this tough persona, because if you don't have this tough persona, then it's like people will take advantage of you. So you got to be tough. So like, that was even hard for myself to kind of like break loose on. I've been more in tune with my emotions than ever. And I can't tell you how much more relaxed I am and how much better I feel about myself now that I'm able to express that. Like, before, crying wasn't that. I've cried in front of my sons, like, just because I want my sons to, you know, if I feel an emotion, I'm gonna feel the emotion. If my sons happen to be there, like, hey, like, I feel these emotions, it's okay. Like, you're supposed to embrace those. So, man, it's just crazy to see, you know, how that meditation has kind of like transformed my overall just quality of life just from like taking that time.
Yeah, I appreciate you sharing that story too, because I firmly believe, like, I cry, like, Dayla was joking, like, 2020, LOL, but I've cried more half a year than like the 4.5 years we've been together. And I saw, I don't know if you saw it as well, but it was like, he was like a karate instructor or something, and he had kids and he was basically teaching them. Like, there was one kid trying to break a board and he hit with his left hand. He couldn't do it a couple times, and he hit with his right hand and he broke the board, and he was sitting there crying. And, the, you know, sensei or whatever was like, have you seen this video?
I haven't seen it, so I'm all intrigued.
Yeah, he's like, you know, he's kind of in his face, but he's like, why are you crying? And the kid, like, can't stop. He's like, why are you crying? Kid can't stop. And then he takes a knee and he gets, like, on the kid's level, and he's like, hey, crying's okay. I want you, like, we are, he was like, as men, we can feel feelings. That's fine. He was like, I'm not mad that you're crying. But he was like, I want to know what's wrong. Like, why are you crying? Yeah. And he was like, I can't with my left hand. He was like, you can't what? And he was like, I can't break the board with my left hand. And he was like, but you broke with your right hand, right? And he's like, yeah. And he's like, okay, you want to try the left hand again? And he was like, let's do it a little bit better and like get focused and stuff. So he brought out a board and like got the kid all ready. And he was like, you know, don't do it until you're ready. And he did it and broke the board. And then he, you know, did the whole thing, like bowed and went back.
Yeah.
But I just thought that was so cool. And I appreciate you bringing up the emotion side of things. Getting back on meditation for a sec, have you ever tried like any of the more woo-woo types? So like binaural beats or like solfeggio frequencies while you listen to, while you meditate?
No, so I just use a Calm app, man. So I got into the Calm app, and my homie Tamara, she does a good job of like, it's like a guided meditation. So like, the reason why I like it is because there's always some type of mindset coaching that goes along with the app. So I use the Calm app, and I was doing it just for your listeners before LeBron thought it was cool. So don't think that LeBron copied me. So we could put that out there. So hopefully, if LeBron hears this, he knows it that he wasn't the OG with the Calm app. So. So I use the Calm app, and they have different types of meditations that you can do. You can just do some that are just with some type of like scenic background noise. You can just get into your thoughts. I've done that a couple times on my balcony, but yeah, man, I'm super into the meditation. It's something that I do every morning. You see me posted on my Instagram, where I have, you know, the kind of daily, devotions or whatever you want. They have like different quotes that pop up, and a lot of them, they always end up relating to things that, you know, my clients face, things that we all face day to day. And I just think it's something that's very, very beneficial. But explain to me the type of meditation you were just bringing up.
Yeah. So first off, I'm glad you sort of like you preempted me, because I was going to give LeBron a shout out for the Calm app. But I've seen you post it too, James, like on Instagram and whatnot. And I love the commercial they have where they're just like, take chill out for 30 seconds. Also, I don't know what the fuck it is about you people in Ohio, but like, you realize LeBron brought a championship, right? Like, everybody talks shit. They're like, yeah, he brought a championship. Like, Kyrie hit the shot. Like, whatever. I don't know what the fuck it is. But yeah, so there's like, and you know, we can get super woo-woo.
Get woo-woo.
All right, cool. So if we break atoms down take the molecular, basically on a molecular level, it can be defined by like atoms at the like atomic level, but it can also be defined by frequencies and waves and frequencies and waves. And so if we extrapolate that out and we choose this one, the frequency and wave, and we forget about the atomic model, you know, like I should be able to push through my hand right now, or I should be able to like push through the pen. Like it's all just waves and vibrations. And like, I should be able to do this, but I can't. But if we agree that we're all just made up of vibrations and frequencies, then all of a sudden light waves, you know, those are frequencies. Obviously there's like hearing frequencies that we can hear and that we can't hear, right? There's a dog whistle that dogs can hear that we can't. And so binaural beats and surfaggio frequencies, like it's in the name, right? Surfaggio frequencies. So it's basically like music at different, it's basically just like beeping. It's not really music, but it's like a tone at a certain vibrational frequency. Mm-hmm. And it's supposed to sort of like tune one's being or tune one's mind, not dissimilar to how you're saying during the Calm app, they sort of talk you through it. And they're like priming your brain for, you know, success or whatever it is that they're talking about. The frequencies, like you can pick a frequency that's more of like healing and pick a frequency that's more love. Wow. Seek frequency that's like ambition or like, you know, problem solving, that sort of thing. And I went down a rabbit hole and tried a bunch of different meditations and different guided meditations. I tried different apps. And now I just will set my phone for like 5 to 10 minutes and just kind of zone out on my own. I also found my old job, I was traveling a lot. And so I couldn't be comfortable every single time. So I was like, all right, it's like coffee. Like I just have black coffee because I was like, I can't depend on sugar and you know, cream always being around. So I was like, I should probably get really good at drinking coffee. That was sort of my same approach to meditation. It was like, I'm not always going to have all of my accoutrements and like headphones or whatever. So let me just set a timer and I'll just focus on my breath basically.
Yeah, that's legit, man. I haven't got to that level yet, but that's the next step, man, because I've been doing it. I started in, it would have been December of 2018. So it's like, James, it's time to step up your game. So like I said earlier, man, Sean and I, we challenge each other in different ways. And this is another way where it's like, hey, have you ever thought about doing meditation this way? And then we just keep growing. If it's working for him, why would he not share that with me? So I appreciate that.
Yeah, 100%. And so you've said you've been meditating since like December 2018 or meditating since this year. Yeah. Have you noticed in meditation that you get that like moment to sort of, because like something will happen. And what I found, James, is in through meditation, I'll have a moment to decide how I want to react. You notice that too?
Oh my gosh, dude, it's all about how you respond and you're more aware and it's more just being mindful, right? And it's like, okay, like you said earlier, when you were going through that challenging time, you just had to go back in your head and say, okay, hey, Sean, everything's going to be okay. You've been here before. What's your next logical step, right? Like what's the next thing that you can do that you can control to not put yourself down that deep dark hole that we can all go in whenever things don't go our way, man. And I definitely will say that I'm able to recognize that so much more now than ever. And even with how I raise my kids, like, okay, James, like this is an opportunity. You're like to be able to understand my son's emotions when they express things. Like I don't like to resort to, you know, giving whoopings or anything. Like that's not my first go-to whenever it's like, okay, how do I understand what my sons are experiencing? And then how do I figure out the best way to approach? Because the best way isn't like always a ass whooping, right? It can be a simple talk and saying, okay, like understanding the why behind something could help them connect the dots on why they shouldn't do something, right? And being able to shed the bigger picture for them, right? It was a funny conversation I actually had with my sons this past Sunday. My one son, Cameron, of course, is bothering my son, Landon. They're twins. Like they do this all the time, right? And he's what was he calling? He was doing something. He was calling him, I can't remember what the saying. I feel like I'm old, but
right.
Call him like buddy or boy. I don't forget what it was, but he said, okay, buddy or something like that. And my son was getting so pissed. I'm like, well, just imagine this, Landon. Just imagine if he said that and then you just didn't respond at all. Then what would Cameron have left to do? And it hit him. He was like, oh, dang, I never thought about that. Like, and he just didn't respond to him. And then Cameron was pissed that he wouldn't respond to it. So I'm like, you see how that works, man? Just ignore him, right? He's like, yeah. So like, it's just crazy, like how like that meditation can help you understand just how to respond in any instance where there's a little bit of, you know, stress or uncertainty.
Yeah. Yeah. Or not, you know, finding like another way around it. I think you and I talked about it when you were here in Austin, but like growing up in Los Angeles and I gravitated towards basketball. So many times I was the only white guy on the court. Mm-hmm. And so you get obviously a lot of shit talking, but how I responded was through humor because I didn't want to get my ass kicked. So I would just like make, even if things bothered me, I'd just like joke about them. And cause I noticed like they were picking on other kids. So I was like, we're probably all in this together. And I used it as a defense mechanism, but it got people off my back. So you teaching your kids how to do that, I think is going to give them a leg up long-term to think about like, oh, okay, I don't need to meet aggression or annoyance with aggression or annoyance. There's another way to think about this.
Yep. 100%.
Also, I'm really glad that you moved. People can't see this. We'll record some of these at some point, but James was like in the sun.
Yeah.
And I can see that like, your eyes and shit. And so we're moving around.
Yeah. Yeah. So funny because I was like, man, I didn't know if you were recording it or not. So I didn't know if I could move, but then I was like, maybe he's not recording it like video wise. So,
you know, so I told you we're running lean here, James. We're not flow state of mind yet. Yeah.
No. Yeah, man. So yeah, man, the meditation has been a complete game changer for me.
That's awesome. You and I know you just switched positions, but I feel like you and I could go on forever. Like the hour that we're looking at just passed by in a blink. So I definitely want to have you back for another one. You know, either in person when we're up there, you're down here, and we can get into some other like passion projects. But you know, what do you got going on now? What are you excited about that you want to share with people?
Yeah, man. So I actually got a couple of things, a big project. So you talk about giving back to the community. You talk about being there. So I got invited to participate in the first all African-American male research study, health and wellness. So I'm doing that. Yeah, I'm doing that on Mondays, man. And I'm spending time with 100 black males. It's called the Black Impact 100 Project. And it's ran by The Ohio State University, the Wexner Center. So it's very dope to be a part of, you know, just something that's bigger, right? That's going to have an impact. So I'm working with these guys over the next 6 months to just help them from a health and wellness standpoint, transform their lives. And when you think about opportunities around health and wellness for the African-American community, it's just not there, right? It's not something that's prevalent. So being able to take part in that is something that I have going on right now that I'm super excited about. And then leveling up my business, man. I told you earlier, I just got off the call with my business coach, and we're scaling to figure out how we can, I brought on two new team members. So I have, that'll be pretty awesome. I'm excited about that. And then also, we're figuring out ways that we can continue to scale and reach more people because I'm so confident in the product or service that I have that it's like, okay, how do we get this out to more people so then that way we can impact more lives? So I have those going on right now, man, and keeping me busy. Obviously, I work a full-time job. So you see a lot of people will quit their jobs before, you know, their business is thriving. But I have kids. I want to make sure I'm in a good place there. But I told myself that I want to get 8 months income saved up before I step away from anything that I have going. And I truly enjoy where I work, man. It's a really great culture. I don't really drink beer like that, but we have beer on tap on the floors when we were in the office. We have a ton of just benefits that we have there that are awesome. And they really embrace the fact that I do have my own business and I can be myself. It's actually one of their core values is be yourself. And it's one thing that I'm able to do there. So I have that going on, man, and it's going pretty well, but I stay busy. And managing my time is something that I have to do. It's not an option. And just trying to stay afloat, man. So,
well, you're doing an amazing job of it, James, for real. Love seeing you. Yeah, for real. Where can people find you? How can people follow along with your journey and what you got going on?
Yeah, man. So I'm big on Instagram. Obviously, that's like the platform for a lot of us. Sean, you're on there. But you can find me on my Instagram account. It's jamesmanley.underscore. So jamesmanley.underscore. And click me a follow. Let me know that you heard me on the podcast, and I'll definitely connect. I enjoy connecting with people. It's something that I genuinely do, regardless if I'm on a podcast, if I'm on social media. You see me out in public, I'm talking to people because it's the one thing that has allowed me to be able to relate more and understand different perspectives.
Yeah, I love that you said that. And for those listening too, if you just want to go to my Instagram as well, search James, like he'll pop up. You'll see him. It's something that I ask everybody to finish out an episode, but what are some like, either you already mentioned Four Agreements. What are some other books that you are either currently into or that you would recommend for others?
So I just started like as of today. So I read for about 30 minutes in the morning. And Jordan gave me the Go Giver. So that's the book. That's the book that I'm reading right now. Sean, you and I have talked about the War of Art, and that book completely changed my perspective. And I know you gave me another book to read, Turning Pro. Which I haven't picked up yet, but and then our other friend Chad gave me a book that I want to read. I have so many books that I might kind of go through. The one that I want to read after I'm done with the Go Giver is I think it's called The 3% Man or something along those lines. I forget the name of it exactly, but How to Be a 3% Man or something along those lines.
I think another one you're talking about. Yeah, there's either that one or there's another one called The Way of the Superior Man. I don't think it's the same book, but they probably talk about similar. Topics.
Similar aspects. Yeah. So like, yeah, man, just jumping into that, man, you can never be a perfect man. So there's always opportunity to improve there. So switching from business to kind of going into personal, like it's kind of like the next route, I think, for the next book I'm going to read. But yeah, those are some of the ones that I've either am going to read, have read, or currently reading.
Awesome. And then do you watch, what I found funny is in our group, there's a ton of people who don't watch any TV or like any movie. Like Dale and I don't know. I'm so grateful that because growing up in Los Angeles, like I worked in the talent agency, entertainment industry for a little bit. And so it's always been in my life. And so to me, like Dale, we were walking to the gym and she was like, I really want to go see a movie. And I was like, fuck, like I would love to just post up in a movie. And especially now that they serve food now. So we watch TV at night to unwind. Do you watch, are you in any shows, any movies?
No, I don't. I'm one of those people in the group. I'm one of the ones in the group that don't watch any TV. I don't even watch like the news or anything. Like I get all my updates about shows and stuff for you guys. Actually, I did watch one that like I'm like in the documentaries, and I did get into the Carter suggested the Jeffrey Epstein one.
And then you went and hid in a corner for like a week.
Yeah, bro. I was like, man, what the hell is this shit? And because that kind of like that's close in Ohio, like. I lived in New Albany at some point in time, and you know I worked under Les Wexner's company, L Brands, and like to know that that was that close, like it's kind of crazy. But yeah, man. So I got into that. That was the last like TV series I watched. Actually, I take that back. So we at my job, we took time to just kind of understand some of the Black movement, right? With you know Black Lives Matter and things. And one series we watched, we took 5 weeks. And we watched When They See Us on Netflix together as a company. And I was a facilitator for that. So I watched that with my company and kind of just, you know, created an open space for people to talk about, man, I never knew about this in the community, or I never knew these were the type of struggles that African-Americans face. So creating that safe space is something that I've watched. So if I do watch anything, it's usually that. Jordan has given me shit to say that, hey, man, you need to watch stuff that's not real just because it's going to tap into your creative side. You know how Jordan is. So,
yeah, I would say, and that's something I've been trying to tell Chad too, because he's like you, he doesn't really watch a lot of TV, a lot of movies. And he watched like one movie on a plane, Bohemian Rhapsody, and then like fell in love with Freddie Mercury. And I even got him a book recently about like his life. And I'm like, Chad, you need to watch other things. Cause you watch one thing and you got this like amazingly inspirational person. So I would agree with Jordan, but you know, there's that double-edged sword. You don't want to just like spend your whole day watching movies.
Yeah, I've been more cognizant of it as of recent. But me and the twins, before the movies and shit shut down, we would go to movies a lot. But yes, I definitely need to get better at incorporating a little bit more of the TV shows and reality and whatnot. So
yeah, 100%. Well, we will bring you back. We'll give you time to catch up with the show. And then when I ask you at the end of the next podcast, you're like, I've done my homework, Sean. I know what shows.
I definitely have some options the next time I'm on.
Awesome. Well, James, I appreciate you, man. I really appreciate the time.
Yep, man. I appreciate it too.
Thanks, y'all. This has been another episode of Shots to the Dome.